The next paper, cisplatinum induced ototoxicity and the effects of intratympanic diltiazem in a mouse model, James Naples.
Good morning, and thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I'm humbled by the opportunity to present my work for you today. How do I advance? There are no disclosures to present today. And with that, I'd like to start by stating the hypothesis that the calcium channel blocker diltiazem will serve as an otoprotectant against cisplatin-induced ototoxicity. And I'll explain how we came to that conclusion and how we derived the fact that an antihypertensive could serve as an otoprotective agent. First, some background on cisplatin. It's a platinum-based chemotherapeutic agent used in the management of a variety of solid tumors. Side effects include systemic effects such as nephrotoxicity and neurotoxicity and ototoxicity. And the ototoxicity is relevant to us because it causes permanent bilateral sensorineural hearing loss, and it's actually a dose-limiting side effect of the drug for the oncologist. Now, the way in which cisplatin causes ototoxicity is shown here. Cisplatin will enter the cell, and the outer hair cells are the most susceptible within the inner ear. It enters the cell, causes DNA damage, and then reactive oxygen species are produced. You see these here, and oxidative stress occurs within the cell. This then activates downstream apoptotic cascades through a variety of mechanisms. Now, apoptosis is a calcium-mediated event, and calcium influx is an essential cofactor for apoptosis, which is where the initial idea of using calcium channel blocker came into play. And it's been shown previously that the way in which calcium influx occurs is through voltage-gated calcium channels with exposure to reactive oxygen species. Now, diltiazem is an L-type voltage-gated calcium channel blocker, and you can see that here. And our thought was that if we use this L-type voltage-gated calcium channel blocker, diltiazem, to block calcium influx, we can further, hypothetically, prevent apoptosis and increase outer hair cell survival. So I'm going to kind of take a step back and talk about how we translated that hypothesis into a research idea. The study design involved two phases. We used CBAJ strain of mice to evaluate, in the first phase, the hypothesis that diltiazem will serve as an otoprotectant. And in the second phase, we evaluated this hypothesis using a variety of two different doses of diltiazem to see if there's any dose effect. Now, at the University of Connecticut, we've created a cisplatin-induced mouse model following this basic design where all the mice received baseline ABRs prior to any intervention. Intraperitoneal cisplatin was given times one dose on day one. On the same day, intratympanic injections were started where we gave five consecutive days of either diltiazem or saline as a control. Follow-up ABRs were then performed to evaluate changes in auditory threshold on day 7, 14, and 21 post-cisplatin. Now, in phase one, we asked the question again, does diltiazem offer otoprotection? And to evaluate this, we had nine mice. We used intratympanic diltiazem at 2 mg per kg in one ear, and in the contralateral half of the ears, we used saline as a control. Tone-evoked ABRs were used in this phase of the study, where four frequency stimuli were presented between 20 and 90 decibels at five decibel increments. And the results are shown here. And these results demonstrate that diltiazem does offer otoprotection early on in the post-cisplatin period. So this graph, these bars represent an average of the saline and diltiazem-treated ears. The x-axis represents the frequency of the stimuli that was presented, and the y-axis represents a percent change in baseline of the ABR threshold. And you can see that there's a statistically significant difference between the two with a reduction in ABR threshold and percent change from the baseline for diltiazem-treated ears. Now, this effect was independent of the frequency of the stimuli that was presented. We ran statistics to see if there was any effect of the frequency that was presented, and there was not. The other thing to note is that this is day 7 data. This effect was not seen at day 14 and 21, so I don't show that data. Now, one thing to note is that this effect appears small, but it is statistically significant and present. And one of the thoughts is that with intratympanic injections in a contralateral control ear, the drug diltiazem may actually get into systemic circulation and affect the contralateral ear. There is some precedence for that in a guinea pig model. And that may actually reduce the real threshold difference between the two groups. So with this data, we moved on to phase two of the study, but we made a few adjustments to the protocol. We asked the question here if there's dose dependency of the otoprotective effect. We used two groups, 15 mice in each group, so 30 mice total. We evaluated 2 mg per kg intratympanically and 4 mg per kg. And instead of using control ears and contralateral ears, we use a control group of mice in each, the 2 and the 4 mg per kg group. So half the mice in the 2 mg per kg group received diltiazem, half the mice received saline, and same thing for the 4 mg per kg group. In addition, because in phase 1 the effect was independent of the frequency of the stimuli, we used click-evoked ABRs, where a click stimuli was presented instead of frequency-specific ABRs. This sound was attenuated by 5 decibel increments until no threshold was recorded. Now, with these changes, the results were quite impressive. You see here on the x-axis, again, the day post-cisplatin, the y-axis represents a percent change from baseline, as in phase 1. And these bars represent the average of all the mice that were part of the study. So the saline-treated ears have a much larger percent change from the baseline in ABR threshold compared to both diltiazem groups. And this is seen throughout the 21-day study period. The effect of of cisplatin is greatest at day 7 and 14, and maximal threshold shift occurs on these days. And there's statistical significance throughout the 21-day study period. So what we did was we compared the saline to both the 2 and the 4 mg per kg group separately, and statistically significant differences in ABR threshold were seen for both groups. You see this here, 0.001 for the 2 mg per kg group and 0.011 for the 4 mg per kg group. But to evaluate the question that we asked in phase 2, whether there's dose dependency, when we evaluated both 2 and 4 mg per kg together and compared those, there was no statistically significant effect. But again, it's possible that we don't know the lowest potential, dose effective at this point. So with that, I'd like to discuss a couple points moving forward. But first and foremost, I want to state that diltiazem did offer significant otoprotection through reduction in ABR thresholds in this study. Now, the other thing to note is that we presume there's early susceptibility of outer hair cells with an increased threshold on day 7 to 14, raising the question of whether there's utility to pretreatment with diltiazem in future studies. In addition, both L and T-type calcium channel blockers, calcium channels exist on the outer hair cells. So the utility of other calcium channel blockers would be good, too, to see if maybe we can maximize otoprotection with a combination of calcium channel blockers. And again, we need to work on dosing optimization and find the lowest threshold dose that serves as an otoprotectant. Histological correlation is going to be necessary as well in pharmacokinetic and CSF studies moving forward, especially because in phase 1 we hypothesized that it does get into systemic circulation. It would be good to see if that hypothesis holds true. And finally, diltiazem's utility in other causes of inner ear damage should certainly be explored, especially in an era where inner ear drug delivery is becoming a new topic. Diltiazem should certainly be added to that list of potential agents. I'd like to end by saying that diltiazem offers a new potential solution and a novel solution potentially to cisplatin ototoxicity. And there's a lot more questions to be answered and much more to come. Thank you to the ANS and Dr. Parham at the University of Connecticut. I'd be happy to answer any questions later on.
Dr. Naples is the recipient of the trainee award, with which he gets a plaque as well as a check for $1,000. So congratulations. Thank you.